Hello, everyone. Welcome to the very newest episode of Uncanny Tracks Covers Lower Decks. We're continuing to cover the final season of Lower Decks, Season 5, as well as the first season, Season 1. We are looking at Episode 7 of each. For Season 5, that is Fully Dilated. For Season 1, that is Much Ado About Boimler. It originally aired on the 17th of September, 2020. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. When you saw the title of the episode this week was Fully Dilated, what was the first thing that came to your mind?
Wormhole was the first, and then you can probably imagine what the second was, too.
Yeah, I thought of someone being birthed. I was like, please don't let Boimler have a baby.
I was not thinking of birth, but I was thinking of something to do with the body.
Okay.
An unlikely title in that sense.
Bob, this is a really hilarious episode. Jokes hit real hard this time. Loved it. Lots of laugh-out-loud jokes. And when I say laugh out loud, I mean belly laugh. I was legit laughing at something that came up.
Yeah, I have been a little sour on Lower Decks Season 5. Not that I think it's bad, just that it hasn't really charmed me as much as prior seasons. But this episode and Episode 6, both I really enjoyed. And I do think it's been very good alternate universe humor. Usually, I think alternate universe humor is pretty bad. But this has managed to use the alternate universe stuff to quite good effect.
I think it's just all starting to rub off on Bob a little bit with the universe stuff. He's starting to accept it. Existing.
I do not accept it. I'm not okay with it.
He's really excited about all these multi.
To give you an example, Matt, like I was thinking of proposing when the absolute Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman hit issue 5, we should do an episode on all three of those series' first 5 issues. And then, you know, maybe keep that going as those series go. But then my hard rule was going to be as soon as they form a Justice League, we're out.
Okay. I could totally do
that. Or even worse, as soon as they start crossing over with the Prime DCU, we're out.
Yeah, that's gross. Yeah, I could do that. That would be nice.
I just want you to know that my hate is still pure when it comes to alternate universe.
Gotcha. So Bob does not like the alternate universe. It's still, however, he's okay with this. He accepts this within Lower Decks and Star Trek.
I have made my internal peace about it.
Much more than I did at first, because I even texted Bob halfway through the episode, and I was like, Bob, this episode's weird, especially when, you know, Data shows up, and you're like, we've seen Data a lot since this big revival with Paramount Plus.
Well, let's be clear, it's not Data, it's Purple Data from the Purple Enterprise D, and that makes it very different, and I have to say, much funnier.
Yeah, it's true. I wonder where they got the purple shade from. I wonder if that was...
I mean, when you think about it, the Enterprise-D, an ugly ship, and not just because of the design, that gunmetal gray.
I'm sure that when they use the weird thing too, Bob, and this is strictly with just me, with video games, purple is usually what they use to try to emphasize some of the grays of the old Nintendo games. So I do remember the Enterprise, I do remember the Enterprise-D being slightly purple in the video games, because RoboCop was also purple in most video games because like gray just doesn't come through.
Matt's playing his Game Boy, he's playing his Super NES, and he's seeing a purple Enterprise.
Primarily NES, just to be clear, not Super NES. Super NES was too many bits. That shit looked pretty good.
Was there a TNG game on NES? I was just guessing Super NES based on time frame.
It was pretty bad though. I mean, for what it was, it was really difficult. I remember the difficulty was way too hard and it wasn't that fun. But I remember you had to like shoot a lot of rocks with phasers, was there a lot of that going on in next gen? I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure there were some rocks being shot with phasers. But
I bet there was a lot of rocks falling on war. I'll put down my marker for that.
There were rocks falling on people, yes, in the Nintendo game. Because that was primarily the only way you could get attacked in Nintendo games, with like things falling on you or getting smacked with a sword. That was about it. Or shot.
All right. So we got a purple multiversal Enterprise D. We've got Matt thinking about purple carpet on the bridge, being really excited about that.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other central conceit we have is Tendi versus Talin, both want to be science officer. Matt, who were you betting on to win the senior science officer race?
I mean, in most cases, I think that Starfleet would probably go with Tendi because of the communication, like they mentioned, and her likability to some degree. Talin is brilliant, though, as a scientist. She would be perfect in this position, but I know how these things usually work out. They want somebody that's more well-rounded. So if it was me personally deciding as captain, I'd want to go with Talin. But I would see them leaning more towards Tendi for leadership, bridge officer.
I agree with them going with Talin seemed the more likely outcome, both because it seemed like Talin was slightly more qualified. It also did seem like they might want to keep Tendi closer to the fore. And I think you kind of speculate on this later. This might be a way to kind of almost like promote Talin off the show, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah. So I'm saying, but I think they would have gone with Tendi, is what I'm saying, though. I personally would have chosen Talin, but I'm thinking if it was just up to Freeman without Data, I think she would have gone with Tendi.
Well, we also have, what, only like 3 episodes left?
Right.
Yeah, so it would make sense for Tendi to go ahead and get a promotion, because I think we assume, maybe we're wrong, but I think we assume that the other 3 of the Fantastic Four will get promoted, you know, as the show winds down.
Right, okay? Yeah, because you have the whole subplot here with Boimler and Rutherford, you know, using that pad to try and copy their other universe counterparts.
Yeah, they're more successful.
Yes.
Themselves.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So they'll probably move up. Are you thinking we're going to see Boimler as a captain before the end of this?
I think we might see it.
First officer. Sorry.
No. We'll see it as like a joke flash forward, I think.
Okay.
Something like that. That would be my guess. Maybe I'm wrong. To keep going, I was going to ask, so Talin, Mariner, and Tendi have to go in disguise in a sort of time compression situation here on this planet. And their disguises, Matt, did you pick up that they look like a cross between the Simpsons from the Simpsons and the Snorks from the Snorks?
I did not, but Bob, you're absolutely right. The coloring of these characters and then the little things that come out, the little, what are they called?
Proboscis.
I'm using the science word. Proboscises that are sick out of their heads are definitely from Snorks.
Their horns in this show, and then, they're proboscises in the Snorks, but the horns do look a lot like proboscises.
Yeah.
And granted, there's 2 of them where I think the Snorks only have 1. Is that right?
Yes, you're correct. Yes. Snorks do only have 1, which is crazy. I remember that. You remember watching that on Cartoon Network? It came on all the time.
I do remember watching. I remember liking it much better than this merch because it was much more visually varied.
Yes. Much more. I was never a Smurfs fan.
I like the Smurfs too, but I liked the Snorks more. Mm. We get the recurring gag that Vulcans have very strong senses of smell. And so Talin offers to cauterize the scent receptors of Talin. Have you ever considered such a drastic move?
I haven't, Bob. And, you know, it pains me, though. I'm sure that planet did smell like dogs. Do you think those planets that they go to don't smell great?
Now that you bring it up, that does seem to be probably one of the downsides of exploring strange new worlds, is a lot of that is getting hit with strange new unpleasant smells. Am I right in thinking that Rutherford's stubble debuted this episode, or was he working on it in a prior episode?
No, it just debuted in this episode. He's trying to grow in a better beard than Boimler. It just appeared this episode. And the point was he grew it faster than Boimler. Like he grew it was already filled in. My brother has the same problem. His beard doesn't grow in all the way.
Well, and Boimler's trying to do like it in parts, right? He's got the soul patch and then he's adding in the sides and the sideburns and he's doing the mustache. He's doing it in parts.
I've never really been into like collecting storyboards or anything, or artwork that they used for concept pieces, for concept art. But I would love to see like just some concept art of them designing his beard, have him side by side, or even a Photoshop where you just keep adding each piece. That would be kind
of
cool.
Yeah, you get a still from like each episode of the season and you can see the progression.
Right. I think that would be awesome. That would be neat.
Matt, I do have to ask, shrimp on a Bloody Mary is gross, right? That's gross.
Bob, I hate shrimp to begin with. That's not my thing. It's gross. So shrimp is just gross in general to me. But spilling it on the transporter console and then licking it off. That was weird. That's another reason why I texted you. It was a little too wacky. It was too wacky.
Especially, I think it was more than wacky. More in Rutherford taking their clothes off and kinkily licking the control panel.
Like,
it had a lot of overtones.
Yeah, go get a paper towel. This is ridiculous.
Well, I do like it's the gag that they're panicking because I can't remember if they actually set up what the time differential is. But, you know,
it was like 1 second was 1 week or something. It was something crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So like every second they're freaking.
So they end up spending 9 months. Well, that does make sense then. So really we got to see the entire. Wow. Okay. So we really did get to see the entire thing they did in their time, in the seconds they actually spent, whereas we saw them, it was 9 months on the planet. So, no, I'm wrong, and they should have gotten paper towels, because all they could do, Bob, was take off their shirts. They'd have time to go get them.
I think it was actually a full year, so that would mean, 52 seconds or so.
There you go.
That they spent cleaning up, which, so we were, time was moving real slow.
But we saw it in real time. Yeah, but we saw it in real time with them. So we really got to see all 52 seconds or whatever you said.
Well, Matt, were you surprised when Purple Data's head showed up?
Yeah, I mean, I knew we were going to see someone with the Purple Enterprise. And since they already mentioned Tasha Yar.
This is after Tasha Yar left the Purple Enterprise, Matt. This was the evil clones of Tasha Yar were attacking the Purple Enterprise.
They dropped her name too many times. So I have a feeling she might show up. But Data was good. I liked him being there, and they didn't overdo it and made it clear it was an alternate universe, like you said, with Purple. So was okay with it. Just took me a minute.
It was also interesting because they set it up both as a tribute to the Inner Light, that famous Next Gen episode where Picard lives a life as a farmer with a
right,
boat, which Mariner references, and they set it up as a reference to that two-parter where they find Data's head in late 19th century Earth with Jack London and Mark Twain.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, good callbacks to this episode. I like how they redid Mariner's whole story with Inner Light and that she's trying to recreate what Picard did and have a family and do all these things and have a lifetime. But mm-hmm. she just ends up in jail.
Hey, she makes valuable friends in that. Matt, were you impressed by Talin improving juggling, or as she calls it, algorithmic tossing?
So it came out of nowhere. That could be like a Vulcan skill, right? Maybe just like a mathematical physical piece. Can you think of a time when Spock had to improvise on the spot with nothing to do with science, though?
I'm sure there must have been a time in the original series, but no example is coming to mind.
Yeah, I couldn't think of one either off the top of my head, but I'm sure there was something. Hit us up on Twitter, folks, or hit us up on X, whatever. Truth Social.
Yeah, I should get us a Truth Social account. That would be much more entertaining than X, the everything app.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy a lot of Tendi's quips this episode. I think my favorite was, my away mission resume is going to be more padded than a Romulan shoulder. That really made me laugh.
Oh my God. Resume padding. You know, the average time hiring managers actually look at resumes, Bob, it's like less than 5 seconds.
That's crazy. That's why I'm a strong believer that a resume should be a page.
It really should be. Because they're just going to take it and toss it if something didn't catch their eye. And you never know what will catch their eye. It could be something stupid. I don't know. You made your name a little bigger.
Oh, God. I mean, granted, I'm not a hiring manager and never will be, but I punish my students for varying font, not a
yes.
I did like the implication in this episode, too, that Tendi is recovering from her time with her family and as a pirate with the Orions, that it's made her more competitive.
Yeah, I love the character development in this show. I mean, going all the way back to season one, and I know I'll belabor this point, Bob, I apologize, but the amount of growth we can easily see by watching season one and season five together is way cooler than it should be, because in the season one episode we covered today, Tendi is so not the same character. We've seen a lot of growth.
Speaking of a weird kind of growth, Matt, we get to see Data gnaw Tendi and Talin free from the papers, or not free from the papers, free from the ropes that bind them. And then Tendi comments that Data truly is fully functional, which, man, that was a creepy joke, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he did it with his teeth, Bob. So just put that in perspective. And that's two Tasha Yar references, Bob, in one episode. Don't tell me I'm wrong for Yar not showing up, because she could have. They mentioned her twice.
But yeah, she'd already gone evil, though.
But she can come back and be evil here.
I also really did enjoy Mariner's line at the end of the episode when they were asking if Purple Data had to go back, and Mariner was like, respect, I'd go back for Geordi, too.
Probably would, too. That's like the best bromance ever, Geordi and Data.
It's a good bromance. It's a good bromance. Matt, if we had more than three episodes to go, it would be funny if we saw Rutherford get jealous of Tendi now having to work with Talin.
Yeah, but I don't think they have enough time to explore that.
But it could be a funny gag. You agree?
Oh, I agree. It'd be hilarious, but I doubt they're going to go that direction. That's why we need another season, Bob.
Yeah, man. Why couldn't all that prodigy have gone into saving Lower Decks? Although, I still say, with as slow as the start of the season is, I'm more at peace with the show ending.
So, Bob, my question to you, with that comment, do you think it has to do with demographics? Do you think the same people watching Lower Decks are watching Prodigy?
Broadly, yes, because I think only Star Trek fans are watching either.
Right, but I mean, people who are... I'm thinking about ages, though. Do you think that has anything to do with it? Do you think a younger age...
No, because I refuse to believe children are authentically interested in Prodigy. I just think that's...
Well, I mean, they're not the ones trying to get it back on TV, but I'm just saying, like... When I say younger demographic, I mean people in their like 20s, as opposed to us who are like, we grew up with the nostalgic Trek. So we're watching the show and we're like, oh yeah, Inner Light. Yeah. And we're like pointing out all these references. But if you only know the JJ movies and you tried to watch Prodigy.
Prodigy does the same thing, but not as well and not as funny.
But still you could catch on. I mean, there's still a story being told that involves characters that are brand new. And
well, yeah, but that's true in Lower Decks, too. And then season two of Prodigy was all about Janeway and Chakotay and the Doctor.
Oh, yeah,
Crusher.
I didn't watch season two, so I guess that explains. Yeah. But we did review it. You did tell me all about it, but I guess I was not paying attention. But if you want to hear Bob talk about Prodigy Season 2, check out that episode. It was
one of our worst episodes.
It was apparently memorable because I completely forgot it, but check it out.
No, I don't think there's that much demographic difference between the two. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. There's an aesthetic difference in that this is more that kind of adult animation style, and it's more squarely aimed at 90s nostalgia.
I think, okay, that's, you're right. The art style.
But the art style for Prodigy feels, it's only 10 years old, as opposed to the art style in Lower Decks, which feels like it's 20 years old.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. And it does have that adult animation feel to it, where it's just not as CGI based and weird, trying to impress us with the animation.
Well, I've said this before. I feel like if I actually watched adult animation, like if I actually watched Rick and Morty or similar things, I might hate Lower Decks because it's so similar.
Yeah.
But I've kept myself pure of that, and so I don't have to be troubled by comparison.
I mean, there is some good adult animation. There's some really crappy stuff. It just depends on what you're looking for, what's out there.
Grant that there's some good stuff. I refuse to believe Rick and Morty is good. But I grant that there's probably other stuff out there that's good. I don't know that I would enjoy it, though.
People swear by BoJack Horseman, but I've yet to
It's a horse that's got depression, Meth. It's the dangest horse that has the problems of a man and is depressed. Can you beat that for relatability, but also a funny concept?
Yeah.
A horse with depression.
I'm just saying, Bob, that's some adult animation right there. I don't know if it's good. I haven't watched it because it looks weird to me, but maybe I would enjoy it. I don't know.
Look, again, I'm
like
saying
Lower Decks.
There's probably other good adult animation.
Yeah.
I'm putting down my marker, having never seen an episode that Rick and Morty nor the horse with depression. I don't think either of those are the good ones.
Bob is marrying himself to Lower Decks, and he's not going to whore himself out to all these other adult animated cartoons. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know that I would have put it with the sexualized metaphor. Yeah. Yes, Matt. That is in effect what I am saying.
All right, Bob. Yes. Good job.
You had a question about the inner white.
I have a very deep question for you, Bob. And I asked a similar question last week concerning Q. And I want to ask you a similar question about Picard and the inner light. Do you think Picard logged everything that happened and that Starfleet Academy requires its students to read those logs? Because I don't understand how the Lower Deck crew knew so much about what went down with the inner light.
Yeah, that would seem to probably be the equivalent. I mean, literally, the joke is just that the Lower Decks people are Star Trek fans, right? But
right.
On the deeper in-universe explanation, yeah, it would probably have to be that, right?
Yeah, which leads me to this next question, Bob, which I didn't pose in the notes. So when we get the Starfleet Academy show.
Oh, God.
Are we going to have these characters learning lessons from episodes of Star Trek that were previously aired?
My thinking is that it probably will be a vector for occasional references, but I don't think it's going to be as strongly present as you're implying.
Okay.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I'm just thinking if they took it in that direction, that would be unique in a sense, because you would have some of the same stories told through younger people in a younger generation. But they're old.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I could see
I'm really not looking forward to having to watch this show to keep my Star Trek completionism going.
Yeah.
I'm really not looking forward to it, brother.
Yeah. Ugh. All right. Well, that answers that then. Okay.
Well, two really fun episodes in a row, Matt. Lower Decks. It's coming together.
It's coming together. And my character of the episode, Bob, I'm giving it to T'Lyn, because I'm glad they didn't abandon her for the remainder of the season, it seems like what they did in the previous seasons.
Yeah, there seemed to be real risk of that at different points of the season. But no, this is a great episode for T'Lyn. I'm really glad they used her so well. And I'm going to give it to Tindy. She basically becomes Emily Dickinson, a recluse, an artist, or a mad woman in the attic. She's up there with her purple data head. I thought that was a really funny reference to the stereotypes of Victorian literature. So I really like Tindy in this episode.
And Bob, one more thing about Tindy. Funniest, most crass joke in the entire show was when she said T'Lyn has big melons.
The melons were so present on screen that I didn't even consider the crass nature of that joke.
You're
exactly right.
That was one of the one times I had the belly laugh, because they made like the most crass joke in Star Trek shit.
Between that and between the fully functional joke, Tindy was doing a blue record at this week.
When Tindy gets tired, she gets
interesting. So less wild would be Episode 7 of Season 1, Much Ado About Boimler. Although, I guess Tindy does get wild in this one in the sense that she has a dog named The Dog. And Matt, I wanted to open with a philosophical question. Who's worse behaved, Tendy's the dog or your dogs?
Well, Bob, my dog is spoiled rotten and thinks everything's going to attack our home. My dog is throwing up red alerts nonstop. That's what dogs are supposed to do, I guess. They're supposed to protect you. But it is spoiled rotten, so... my dog's pretty badly behaved. Tendy's dog, though, I don't think Tendy's dog is a dog. I don't count it as a dog. Not when it was doing that weird...
You don't think dogs can just fly away and talk?
No, and they don't, like, open up, like, whole sarlacc pits in their heads that have bats shooting out of them. That's the best way I can describe that. That's exactly what happens, too. A sarlacc pit opens up in its mouth and, like, bats fly out of it. It's creepy. That's not a dog, Bob.
So, Matt, have you seen the two big cinematic influences on this episode, which are 1982's remake of The Thing and 1932's Freaks?
Okay, yeah, I've seen 82's The Thing, Bob. It came out in 1930?
Yes.
Wow. No, I've never seen Freaks. Probably need to, then.
It's an iconic movie. It's not one of my favorites, but it's been parodied and imitated in pop culture so much. It's the origin of One of Us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just pulled it up. I'm looking at some still images from it. Yes, I do recognize the imagery. So I've seen some of the imagery from it before. There was a remake in 2018, yeah. Bob. You don't want to count that one?
No, I'm sure it sucks. I'm sure it sucks. See, the Thing in 1982 is a remake of, I think, a 52 movie. And that movie is interesting, but not amazing. It's the early 80s thing is the real deal. I also don't count the prequel that came out in 2011.
The Thing 82 is a great film.
Well, moving from great to terrible, the line "Boy, me up" is a war crime.
Yes, it is.
There should be a convention and panel to judge Boimler for saying that.
Yeah, and it's even worse that Marin Reed at the end of the episode just added to it and made it a thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
At least I don't think it kept going through the rest of the series, so at least it dies here. I did enjoy Dr. T yelling at Boimler that Division 14 is for unsolvable space illnesses and science mysteries. That made me chuckle.
All right, so we get this whole group of people that have these issues, these illnesses.
Inspired by the 1932 movie, The Freaks.
Correct, yes.
Just freaks, yeah.
Could you think of any other Star Trek oddities or mishaps there could have been sent to the farm that they didn't include in this episode?
Granted, Boimler is sort of there because of a transporter accident, but I think the obvious thing would have been to have I guess they did have the people welded together, but I don't know. You think they almost would have gone in a different direction with the transporter accidents, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. I also kind of wonder whether Thomas Riker, is he considered like the same thing? If you clone yourself in a transporter, would the clone not need to go to the farm?
Well, he just goes back into the service, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, but I do like that they did reference a salamander from Voyager as one of the freaks, which was one of the only things I know about in Voyager.
That was kind of funny. Do you think that was Janeway, Tom Paris?
What happened to their kid? I don't remember.
If I remember correctly, Janeway leaves their kids on planet.
Yeah, so it's probably their kids.
Well, but the planet's in the Delta Quadrant. Although, if I'm remembering the scenario of that right, it's they evolve into giant salamanders because they spend too much time at warp 10. Somebody else could have just been experimenting with the transwarp barrier, and that could have happened to them.
That explains it, yeah. Maybe when Voyager came back, they're like, hey, try this while we were out there. And they did it, and sent them to the farm.
Well, Matt, speaking of the farm, the first time you watched this, I bet you had no context for the weird three-armed, three-legged red alien who was running the farm. But now, me having forced you to watch the 70s animated series, you know all about Eric's the replacement for Chekhov, who's an Edozian. So are you happy to see another Edozian character?
Yeah, I saw that guy and I was like, that's not an unusual species. One of them was a member of the Enterprise bridge crew. Yeah, I know that guy. He's got three fingers too, Bob. You left that part out.
Yeah. Three fingers, three arms, three legs.
Right.
I did think it was a little weird that they never gave him a name.
Yeah, I went to look it up because I was thinking, like, he had to have a name, right? Nope, nothing.
No. It's not like I expect him to join the cast, but he seems like the type of character you might have come back to in later seasons, you know?
Well, he also figured he was a, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here to tell you, you're going to the farm. He didn't even introduce himself. Yeah. He's just there. You know, okay. He's the one in charge.
And you give him a sinister-sounding name, right? And then it's just like, no, that's just how Edozian naming conventions go.
Not just a name, Bob. A laugh as well.
Indeed. He does have a very distinctive laugh, at least. I do think the ship that our Edozian scientist, our Edozian shrink was on, the Osler, I do think it's a pretty cool ship design.
Yeah, I got B5 vibes from it, Bob. I can just hear like the shadow music as it moves through space.
You know, I wasn't thinking that, but now that you say that, I totally can see it. It does very much seem like blocky, kind of Babylon 5 ship design.
Right. It didn't have that Star Trek look to it.
I do like Mariner going around being immature with her college friend and her college friend's new friends. And I especially do like Mariner's delivery on the line. Ransom almost died. It's pretty funny.
She pulled a prank on him, right? That was what the deal was. Yeah. So she almost killed Ransom and thinks it's hilarious. Like, that's just a little psychotic in Mariner's part.
Mariner's college friend, she's chilling with a Vulcan. She's chilling with a Trill. And then that third alien she's chilling with is a Rigelian. He's apparently the first named Rigelian in Star Trek. And apparently, internally, they're very similar to Vulcans biologically. There's some references to that in the original series and Enterprise.
Yeah, and then I think they're first mentioned in the motion picture as intelligent.
Nope. Different Rigelians.
Different Rigelians are not the turtle ones?
Yeah, so there's a lot of planets.
I thought they just
there's
changed.
A lot of planets. No. Yeah, because you're right. They are turtle aliens in the motion picture, but there's a lot of planets in the Rigel system. I think there's at least like 8.
Oh, they're on a different one. Yeah. Well, I was all cool because I was, damn, this predates the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all that. Nope, not the same. I just figured the TMP had a really lame design and just the motion picture one had a really bad design. Yeah, and then they made it better as they went further on with the. Oh, well then, okay, just a completely different species I'm talking about, my bad. But I did not know
that.
It blows my mind.
The same star system.
Yeah, it blows my mind, though, that they had Ninja Turtles before Ninja Turtles. That's cool.
It turns out intelligent turtle, not a super big reach. And like I was saying, these Rigelians, the type we see in the lower decks, I think they also were mentioned a few times in the original series.
Yeah. And then I do know, I saw one on Enterprise, like a female. So...
And I think that was the Lower Decks type, not the turtle type.
Yes,
but
yes.
That's
the Lower Decks type. All right. So one thing about this episode, Bob, the two episodes we watched this week, they both focused on promotion and dealing with promotion, which is a big theme in Lower Decks.
Yeah, I was about to say not to criticize your connection making that, but I feel like every episode.
It's just crazy. Like the first season and then the last season, we're still focusing on promotions. We haven't changed that much. But some things change, some things never change. Same stone, I guess.
Although it is interesting, isn't it pretty much just always Mariner doesn't want to get promoted and Boimler does, and then Tendi and Rutherford have no opinion about it, except for, granted, in this previous episode, Tendi wants that senior science officer position. But in general, it doesn't seem Tendi and Rutherford are very bothered by it.
There's a bigger thing here, Bob. I think that Tendi and Rutherford have this idea that if they work hard, they will be promoted, whereas the other, Boimler is just, he has no strategy whatsoever. And then Mariner is of the opinion of, she can just fail her way up, which is what she does.
But she doesn't want to fail her way up. She specifically doesn't want to be promoted.
Right.
Mariner.
But the problem is that
in a lot of different times.
But her failing pushes her up, though. That's the problem. Bob, the character of the episode for this particular episode, I'm giving it to Rutherford just because I felt he had a pretty good part here. This is a good Rutherford episode.
Good Rutherford episode. I'll give it to Tendi. She doesn't like regular dogs, and I think that's very funny.
All right. Well, hope you fans are excited that we got this out the day after it aired.
Don't expect that to ever happen. All right. Well, this has been Uncanny Tracks Covers Lower Decks. Join us. It might be a couple weeks delay to get the last ones, but we'll get them out for you. And have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.